Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning, and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning with three special guests, four special guests, but Tammy isn't a special guest. She's a co... Greg Long, Executive Director. I'll give the whole title just this once. Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Bob.
All righty. And Kim Weaver, Director of External Affairs. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
And Larissa Stokes, Assistant General Counsel.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. And Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP.
Good morning, Bob.
GovExec columnist. Come on, Tammy.
That's enough.
Fellow seminar presenter, anyway, and longtime good friend and colleague. All righty. So brag a little bit, y'all. 2012 was a good year. 2008 was kind of a bad for everybody. Are we above the 2008 doldrums?
We are. And so 2012 was a good year in the securities markets. The stock and bond markets performed well. And it was a good year. And because it was a good year in the markets, we, of course, offer funds that track those markets, and TSP participants benefited.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Other than the G, mm-hmm. the other funds are patterned after something called an index.
Mm-hmm.
And an index is the same index that might be used for the thrift as well as mm-hmm. Vanguard or Fidelity. This is not... I'm not pitting anybody mm-hmm. against any, but it's like you're going to the store and here are the aisles, but this is all we sell.
Yep.
So an index is, let's do the C fund. It's 500, the biggest.
So the C fund tracks an index. And what an index is simply a basket of goods. In this case, it is a basket of 500 securities. The S&P 500 is the index that the C fund tracks. So what we do is we invest through an investment manager into a fund that does its best to try to perform exactly as that basket of 500 funds or 500 stocks. So the manager that we work with goes out and tries to buy and sell those 500 different stocks in the exact right amounts at the exact time that to replicate the performance of that same basket in the actual marketplace. I think it's important when investors are thinking about what are they buying. They're buying a share of that big basket of 500 securities, and what our job is to manage that as efficiently as possible, to try to drive costs down and to try to replicate as close as possible the performance of those 500 stocks in the marketplace.
Okay, so you mentioned a manager. So really this is not run by Greg, Kim, and Larissa.
That's true, yes. Yes, every few years what we do is we put an RFP out to the marketplace and we try to secure the best money management services we can at the lowest cost. In this case, the C fund is managed by BlackRock. There are other managers of those types of index funds, but BlackRock is the firm that we've hired and engaged to manage that money.
All right. Let's say Tammy and I are feeling our oats after today's show,
mm-hmm.
and we set up the Tammy and Bob 500 Stock Index Fund, and we have to shop mm-hmm. at the same supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
What would make one do better than the – well, let's say, how would you do better than us?
Okay. Well, what we're going to look for is the ability to have the systems and the knowledge and the capabilities in place to execute trades extremely efficiently. For instance, General Motors is in the S&P 500 and the value of General Motors goes up or goes down – you need to be able to execute trades in General Motors rapidly and efficiently. So how do we know that the Bob and Tammy Investment Management Company can execute trades in GM and do it at a very low cost and do it very efficiently so that the difference between the holding value of GM and the Bob and Tammy fund manages or matches the return of GM in the marketplace?
Okay, Tammy, maybe we won't do this.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Have to have a very significant infrastructure in place in terms of, do you have the trading desk? Do you have the technology? Do you have the research and the risk analytics and the risk the ability to control potentially trading the wrong security at the wrong time?
So the big, I'm not going to mention names, the big houses, if you will, the big brokerage houses, private investment managers, et cetera, they have to have the same ability to do it. But I would say usually everybody doesn't do the same at the end of the year.
Yeah, there are differences, and they tend to be relatively small, but we care about them. You know, even if it's, you know, only 0.1%, that adds up over time. And so the ability to trade efficiently, to do it at low cost, and to manage risk associated with those trades is very important to what we do. And while the participant might not at any point, you know, see a huge difference in 0.1%, it's important to us.
Talk about the value of the thrift in total.
I mean, it's enormous. We're over $230 billion.
Okay, so a small percent on $230 billion is a lot of money.
It is, yes. It is a very large pie, and a small slice of a very large pie adds up to be a lot of money.
Okay.
I said 230, 330. Yes. Yeah, 329 billion.
We had a bad year.
Yeah, 329 billion is
everybody's dropping out.
the total assets in the plan, $329.9 billion. So just about 330.
I remember it was a couple years ago I asked you this question. Do you all notice money going out of the thrift into a particular place? And your response was great. He said, with the size of the fund, it's pretty hard to see major blips. You can see you know, a little bit, but there weren't major blips.
And you know, we spend some time, you know, tracking who the change in allocation among the different funds. You know, over the past several years, what we have seen is, especially with the turmoil in the economic markets, is we've seen more fund leave the C and the S and the I funds and go into the G fund. Unfortunately, that means more people missed out on very favorable market return over the last year. But when people are afraid, concerned, then they're going to move to the safest option we have, which is, of course, the G fund. You know, never loses a dime, super safe G fund. But you miss out on the upside potential. And clearly, 2012 was a year of good upside potential.
Has there been any look at like the mentality of the employee as far as, is that just an emotional response, or is it also a lack of knowledge of how to manage money in general?
Well, we think it's some of both. Mm-hmm. And some of it, by the way, is a third piece of this, is there's some rational movement here. Some of it's just an emotional
response.
Move. You know, I read something bad in the front page of the paper, therefore move to G. And then there's some reaction of, we're not really sure what to do. I hear the person next to me does G, so that's what I'm doing.
Right.
And the third, when I say rational, is, you know, the baby boomers are aging. They're nearing retirement. Clearly, we have a lot of baby boomers as federal employees. So the rational move is to get more conservative as you get older. So that suggests that some of it is appropriate.
Right. So they're just shifting money to something less risky as they as they move on in their career.
Right. Which is behavior we'd like to see. What unfortunately gets difficult to decipher is how much of the movement is behavior that we'd like to see, as opposed to how much of the movement is behavior that we think is reactionary.
Driven by reaction, yeah. Because I see that in just people choosing to retire based on what they hear in Congress, you know. Oh, they're going to change, you know, the high three to high five, so I better get out of here. So it's a lot of reactionary, both sides of it.
So the best we can do, and we're doing it right now, and we do it every day, which is just to try to continue to get our message out, to try to educate, to do it through every medium that we have, radio today being the one of choice. And restate it and re-educate as best we can. We know we won't reach everybody, but we try.
Okay, let me go back to just my basics so that everybody starts with a solid footing. The C fund is an index fund, but if I'm not mistaken, the F, the I, and the S is an index fund.
Correct.
As well. There are different indexes created by some house, if you will. Alrighty. The L funds are a mixture of the baskets, but still they're driven by the index, with the exception of the G fund.
Yes.
Is that a safe assumption?
Yes.
Did I say that right, Larissa?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, good. All right. Then we've been getting some mail and in class a discussion of the G Fund, lending money, if you will, to the government. Now, maybe I'm going to look at this as too simplistic. That is the G Fund. The G Fund takes cash from the government employees' salary that goes into the thrift, and then it's lent to Uncle. No?
Well, we get this every time people start bringing up the issue of the debt ceiling, and unfortunately, this is now routine for us. We've done this well over 10 times, in the life of the TSP, and it's safe. And I try to emphasize that we have structured a regime in the law under which participants in the G Fund are credited with interest, whether that we're at. Whether we're in the suspension period or not. So what is now one of the possible extraordinary measures that the Treasury Secretary could do is to suspend issuance of those Treasury securities in the G Fund. So, but, and this is a very important but, we have a specific law that we, a make-whole provision that we got inserted into the law. This is as clear as you can get legislatively, that those funds will be made whole when that issue, that suspension period is over. And so if we move into that, and we haven't yet, but if we do, and that the issuance is suspended, there will be some time after which that suspension will be lifted. The participants who are in the G Fund will be economically exactly the same. It doesn't matter one bit.
And even if during that period somebody wanted to move money around from the G or to the G, that doesn't have any effect on what's happening.
There is no change in the ability to move money.
Or even withdraw funds.
There has never been any change in the impact in all the times that we've done this. Mm-hmm. And nobody's ever lost a nickel. And the change in law is as strong as we can make it. Or the protection in law is as strong as we can make it.
And the rate of return is the same. So somebody sitting there saying, well, they're going to lend it to the government for a lesser rate. No, it's the same rate regardless.
It's the same rate regardless. The economic impact to participants, me being one of them, is zero.
Okay.
And the GAO, I'd like to add, the GAO has reviewed this. And last July, after the last suspension, they issued a report concluding that all money had been returned and there was no harm, no foul.
Well, that is like the good housekeeping seal of
exactly
approval,
right,
isn't it?
It is indeed.
It is unfortunate, but this has become routine for us now. We know how to do this.
I think every time it's announced in the media, people think this is the first time this has ever happened. But I remember back when the TSP started, this was something we learned about as we were explaining the G Fund to employees from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So this isn't nothing new.
No, nothing new. Mm-hmm. I wish it was more rare.
Yeah, that's not the TSP's fault.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay, so I think we've got the basics now, and I find in class sometimes people just don't understand what an index is. Mm-hmm. And I try to do it simplistically, and maybe I'll tell them to listen to this show.
Because
it was done much more eloquently. All righty, so let's now look at the upbeat side. How can we put more money in? But more importantly, has there been any progress with regards to being able to put money in through annual leave?
Not so far. That provision has been in several different bills last year. The problem is because it delays paying tax, it carries a score from the Congressional Budget Office of $387 million. And so that has delayed it getting through. And that means that it's unlikely, I think, to pass in the near term.
Right. So employees who are leaving federal service who get paid that lump sum payment for annual leave, a lot of times they do ask about that. They don't even realize there is a proposal, but they just want to know, can I allocate, like if I'm going to retire at the end of 2012 and now I'm getting my lump sum leave check in 2013, they'd like to dump the whole thing in the thrift because they haven't been able to put money in for this year.
Right.
But the rule has always been you cannot contribute from your payout of annual leave into the thrift ever.
Exactly.
And this was a possibility, but not a probability.
Yeah, especially, I think, given the budget turmoil, it's unlikely this coming year.
All right, let's switch over to I would say, our sweet spot, retirees and separated employees. Not that we don't deal with current employees, mm-hmm. but we do a lot of pre-retirement seminars and the like. With regards to their usage of the TSP funds, do you see any larger amounts going out of the thrift, say, to an IRA? Or do you see them pull back a little bit and stay with the nearest term L fund or the G fund? Do you see any kind of correlation between somebody of that ilk and their management of the funds?
Well, so for your separated participant, they, of course, have an ability that active participants don't, and that is that they can take the money out. So if you're an active employee and under 59 and a half, then you are required to leave the money there except in some other exceptional circumstances. So there are 1.33 million separated TSP participants. And what I think is impressive is that those 1.3 million people could take their money tomorrow. They don't. And that the number of separated participants in the TSP has been consistently growing. And I take that as reflecting that the people who have the money in the TSP, once they leave, they could take it elsewhere. But by and large, they don't. They leave it right where it is. It's because we have low-cost funds that are easy to understand, and they see value in it. But that's not everybody. You know, there are some people that are going to say, you know, I have a broker down at big brokerage firm, and I'd like to move it to an IRA with him or her, and I'd like to move it to an IRA at a bank, and that's fine. You can do it. We try to educate participants as much as we can to say, if you're going to move the money out, just please do it with eyes wide open. Is be aware of the expenses, be aware of the fees, be aware of the limitations that might exist in any IRA provider. But it's their money, so they can. We'd be thrilled if they choose to leave it in the TSP, and most do. But they're certainly welcome to withdraw and move it to an IRA if they like.
Is it true, Greg, if they took the entire amount and moved it out of the TSP, then the account is closed? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if they took, let's say, a portion of it, even 90% of it, but left 10% of it in the thrift, they would have the option to move money back into the thrift from that IRA if they wanted to?
Yes. And so this is one of the things that I absolutely encourage people to do, which is not close their TSP account. Let's think of somebody who's, you know, young, does 4 years in the military, has a TSP account, leaves, closes it, and then they get a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and they realize, geez, wouldn't it be nice if I could take the IRA and 401k with my current employer and move it back into the TSP where the expenses are 10 times, just a fraction of what we're currently paying. And unfortunately, if that account is closed, they can't do that. If they leave the account open, they've got a mechanism for life in which they can move their IRAs and old 401ks back in to the lowest expenses that are available on the planet. And so we very much encourage people not to close their TSP account. But, you know, we're not going to make the rules here, because while we encourage, we're not going to force. It's right. Their money.
And when you do make a withdrawal from the TSP, there are forms you fill out, either a partial withdrawal, a full withdrawal. Mm-hmm. And because of the Roth, I've noticed those forms have become lengthier.
Yes.
So do you now have a system online where someone can make a withdrawal election without filling out the paper form? They could go to like a smart computer whiz?
First, let me acknowledge the problem, which I agree. Roth is a feature that we rolled out in early 2012. And it allows people to move either pre-tax or Roth, which is money they've already paid taxes on. But it does complicate the choices. And as it complicates the choices, it complicates the form. Yeah. And therefore, the form has gotten longer. I regret that. We've tried to make it as simple as possible, but there's no getting around it.
Right.
What we have done is we've worked on a withdrawal form wizard.
Yeah, that's what it was. I remember there was something online where someone could go there and be walked through and maybe skip some of the portions that don't apply to them.
Exactly. And so what the wizard does, it works like a wizard on when you set up Microsoft or set up any program, is it asks you the right questions and then skips the ones that
don't apply to you.
And so then we fill out, the wizard fills out the form based upon your answers, and you still have to print it off and sign it.
Okay.
But it means that we know the form is completed with accuracy, because what I know is frustrating is you complete a form, maybe you don't understand something, you complete it wrong, you send it in, we have to reject it. We don't like that. The participant doesn't like that.
How long would that delay the payout if that were to happen?
Mail time back and forth. So you're talking a couple of weeks probably.
Yeah.
Errors will always happen. We can't eliminate them, but we think the wizard is going to make meaningful step in reducing that.
And that's available now for
separated
employees to use.
We recently built that and put that out.
Yay. And what is the turnaround time when somebody does apply for a withdrawal, as far as like when I send my application in the mail? Is there a one day a month time that the TSP process, or they process daily as received? Or
we're processing daily as received.
Yay.
Yeah. Years ago, we used to be on a monthly system.
Yeah,
as we move to a daily system, mm-hmm. We process
as they're received.
As received, yeah. And you know, some days we get a big pile, and it might take a few days before they all get processed. Some days there's a small pile, and they're done that day. But generally, withdrawals are processed within a week.
Is there a certain time of the year people tend to take money out of the thrift? Like when people retire at the end of the year, are they also making TSP elections?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And one of the disappointing things is we see more loans before Christmas.
Oh.
So there are certain seasons where we see greater amounts of withdrawal and distribution activity. And we try to staff up for that and prepare for it. But, you know, there were always spikes that we're unprepared for.
But not major backlogs.
No.
Can I go back to the separated retired individual and your comment about don't draw the money out of the TSP?
Mm-hmm.
Is the floor that you would have to leave in it to keep it alive $3,500?
Yeah, I think you're right. But I had to double check the minimum required amount.
Let's call it X,
yeah.
And we can define X
when
we get. Here's my thought process here, that they would want to leave X in there, mm-hmm. just so that they could keep it. And your comment about, let's say they went to another job and they didn't like the retirement plan in that job,
mm-hmm.
they could fund it and then move it over, assuming they could do that.
Yep.
And then the other thing, somebody retiring between 55 and 59 and a half, distributions from the thrift
mm-hmm.
are not subject to a penalty.
But there are specific rules about that,
yeah.
And it depends on it. We have comments about this at every conference we go to. Is the question is, are they separated between those times?
Let's say they retired.
Yeah,
they're gone.
They're separated.
Yeah.
Yes.
All righty, but and we do this in class. I said, you know, if you're in this, and put it up on the board. I said, if you're within this range, you know, you can move money out of an IRA. Into the TSP. Now, it's not any money in the IRA. It's fully taxable money in the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And then you change your penalty age downward. So if they had not hit 59 and a half, they could move some of the money out of their traditional IRA into the thrift,
mm-hmm.
and they'd have a bigger part to withdraw from without regards to a penalty. Whereas if it stayed in an IRA,
mm-hmm.
it would be subject to a penalty until mm-hmm. they hit 59 and a half. It's not the year that they hit 59 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting way too technical.
Yeah, well,
this
sounds like a creative solution to me.
Well, I mean, and people go, I didn't know I could do this. And then we go further, and I said, well, let's forget 59 and a half. Let's say that you're 65 and you could move money into the thrift. No, you can't. I said, yes, you can, but it would have to be the taxable portion of your thrift or similar type investment, a 401k.
Yeah, we often get people who have IRAs and or the biggest chunks are 401ks. You know, you somebody works for government and they move to work for a law firm or work for some other sort of firm for 5 or 6 years. They build up a 401k. Then they separate, and it's only at the point of separation from that other private sector employer that 401k then becomes transferable into the TSP, and we are quite pleased to accept those monies.
Yeah.
All righty, Tammy Letterman put this in here, the top five or the top 10. Tammy Flanagan.
Tammy
Letterman. David Letterman has the top 10, right?
I was like, what?
Okay. That's what I meant. So we don't have to do five, but they're kind of like the top five of things that you might advise. Well, you can't advise. That's not fair because you can't do that. But do you see the top five mistakes somebody makes after they leave federal service with regards to the thrift. Is that a fair question? If it's not a fair question, I could understand where you'd say, no, I can't do that.
Well, I can tell you that the call volume at our call centers focus on withdrawals. That's about 30 to 35% of the calls every day.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was curious about, was like, what are they hearing that is consistently happening with people?
Well, and then
maybe
the other
try to fix.
Well, and then the other group of calls is loans. That's 25 to 30% each day. And it's basic questions. Can I get a withdrawal? If so, how? Can I get a loan? If so, how? And then what's the status of my loan and or withdrawal request? So it's very basic information. And again, as we mentioned earlier, we do have wizards online that help you fill out these forms that do walk you through these. And especially the withdrawal form, as we said, has gotten pretty complicated. Right. So we'd really encourage somebody to use that wizard. But in addition, we now have a YouTube channel. It's TSP4Gov. And we have put up different videos on Roth for civilians.
I like that Roth video, by the way.
Thank you.
I'll let
our people know. They worked hard on it to make it really punchy.
He was bouncy and
educational.
Understandable.
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for.
Right.
And we have one that's what's the difference between a contribution allocation and an interfund transfer? That's a perennial issue that
always comes up over and over again.
So as we notice specific confusions or issues, we'll be using that as another way to get the message out.
I've even noticed people get frustrated when they send in the beneficiary forms. I had one lady, she said she kept getting it notarized and it would come back. It's like, well, you don't notarize a beneficiary form. Maybe that's why they're sending it back to you. So it seems like, sometimes just in the completion of the forms, people, instead of taking the time to read it, you just think you're knowing what you're doing when I guess you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Okay. The ceasing of the payroll tax holiday is going to hit people in their first paycheck in January.
It already has. They're getting the first paycheck right now this week.
And I've heard this. Oddly enough, we did a class last week, and somebody said, I'm going to receive less money now, and I've gotten used to it. They forget that, this was just a two-year hiatus. Mm-hmm. And the comment was, I'm not making this up, I might pull back on my thrift contribution. I go, no. Because not only taxes isn't everything, but economics is everything. Mm-hmm. The economics of it is you pull back on it, then you lose the compounding, you lose the growth, and you most likely are never going to make up for that. Now, again, that's easy for me to say. I'm not losing $1,000 or $2,000.
$30 to $60 a pay period or a month, I think.
Especially if after I got it, I've been spending it for 2 years. It's pretty hard not to spend.
We're certainly aware of it. And I have no data to tell you that we're going to see a decrease in our total contributions. We'll be paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. I hope we don't. And I just want to make sure that I emphasize to people, if there is a change in their deferral amount, if you're a FERS employee, you absolutely have to be at least at 5%, because if you're not at least 5%, you are leaving free money on the table.
And the catch-up contributions don't let you go back and catch up those missing contributions.
Right. Yes. Catch-up contributions does not let you go back and get that match.
No.
So it is critical that at the very least, if you're FERS, you're at least 5%. And we always encourage greater contributions. The good news is the power of inertia will help us here, in that if people had to set up a higher contribution amount, they are less likely to go back and change it, which I think is good. But there might be a few people that pull their contributions back. I would prefer they not, but people will have to pay the rent and the mortgage and put food on the table. And if that becomes a priority, we'll certainly understand it.
I understand that too, but they need to understand if they pull it back, if they pull it back a dollar, they don't get a dollar.
Right.
They're going to have to pay taxes on it. And I thought I would do something simple. Mm-hmm. If you did it for $500, and I'm going to do this, if it made 4%, 5%, 3% in 5, 10, 15 years, this is what you did to yourself.
Yeah.
And then, enough of all that, because I'm getting, out. I can't help myself. And I'm glad Larissa's in the room, because she looks at me like, no, move on, Bob. All right. So when you last were here, it was right before the introduction of the Roth TSP. Mm-hmm. And you made a comment that it would impact, or people would be more inclined to do it based on what you call the barbell effect, which is terrific. I credit you when I do this in class. Mm-hmm. And picture somebody lifting barbells with, depending on how much weight they got, you're going to have a bow, right?
Yep.
And I try to explain that the Roth TSP would apply to the barbell lower side mm-hmm. as somebody younger. Mm-hmm. Because they can afford to take the tax hit, and they got, you know, a career full of tax-free growth. Mm-hmm. And as time goes on, their earnings go up. Picture again the barbell, and then it kind of levels out. That might be mid-career. And mm-hmm. then you got to go, is it worth it for me to do this? Maybe I shift. And then the other side of the barbell is usually the people that I talk to, the pre-retirees, and they go, what do you mean? And I go, okay, if you put in $15,000. If you put in $10,000, Uncle Sam's give you a check back in the traditional TSP. Mm-hmm. So you don't really put that in because you get a refund of the money. Now, you know, you also have this term, pay me now or pay me later. Mm-hmm. You will pay, but it allows more money to get in there. I said, it's the reverse. If you put $10,000 in, you're going to pay Uncle for the rights to do that. I'm not saying the Roth is bad, but they don't always understand that. And then at that stage, they're a little bit more inclined to be able to put more in. And I go, this is how much it'll cost you to put in, say, 22.5. Mm-hmm. And they go, really? And I go, I don't know your tax bracket, nor am I asking, but you check it out.
Well, we do have a very nice feature, a calculator at TSP.gov. And it's designed to demonstrate paycheck impact. Whether you put money into the Roth or whether you put money into the standard TSP. And so that's designed to really drive that message home. And I do thank you for remembering what we talked about a year ago. And I do think that we are going to have, and so far we have had, a different experience with the Roth than might exist in the private sector. Generally in the private sector, Roth has been a feature that has been most appealing to the highest paid employees, people who aren't eligible for Roth IRAs because of the income restriction. Mm-hmm. And they've been driving for a way to put money in post-tax, and Roth 401k has been a way to do that. And we have, in the federal space, people who have been asking for Roth that are similarly structured. Federal judges come to mind, especially those that are going to be paid for life, that find Roth to be a very appealing feature. But I became convinced, and I think it's now bearing true, that it appealed not just to the highest net income folks, but actually to the lowest and youngest people. And we're seeing that because as Roth comes out, it just recently became available in the uniformed services, and we're seeing a significant increase. We now have, after just a few months, there's 73,000 Roth accounts. And the uniformed services are the faster pickup. But if you think about it, let's say you're 20, 21 years old. You're in uniform. Your income is not that high, but your living expenses are largely paid for. You know, you've got three hots and a cot. And so even though you're in a low income, you have more disposable income. And the pre-tax benefit typically associated with 401ks means less to you because you're in such a low tax bracket. For them, they can put money in the Roth, pay the taxes at the very low tax bracket. Then that money, and if they do it right, all the earnings associated with it are tax-free 30 and 40 or 50 years later. For the people at the youngest and in the lowest tax bracket, Roth financially is a very attractive option.
Oh, yeah.
Is it available now at all? Payroll offices have now made it available to their employees?
All the big ones.
Yeah.
There are, I think, a couple of really small outliers. But for virtually everybody in uniform services and certainly in civilians, Roth is available.
Is it also catching?
It's not available for reservists yet.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
DFAS has to roll that out sometime later year.
The ones who are serving on active duty?
Right.
Has it caught on with the civilian side like it has on the military side?
Yeah.
And you said 73,000 accounts. Is that combined?
Yes.
Military, uniform services, and civilian?
Right. And so, we're it's not that we're pushing this. It's, we don't have products to sell.
Just watching it.
Our you know, we don't worry about profits, and our paychecks don't matter change. Whether people will, you know, do it or not. But we want to offer an option that has some financial benefit to it, and we're pleased. The reason we put it out there is because we recognize the benefit at the lowest end of the income spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that's really what got me to get behind a feature that added complexity to the plan, because it does have some real financial benefits to the folks at the lower end.
Right.
Three hots and a cot now. That's three meals and a place to sleep, right? Okay, yes. Just yeah. I'm remembering my basic training. What are you complaining about? You got three hots and a cot. Okay. All righty. L-Fund, as we're near-term retiree or a new retiree, and the L-Fund, depends on how you look at it. If I'm very cautious, I'd probably pick the L-Fund X date closest to the day I retire. If I'm going to say, well, I don't really necessarily need it, I could go to the L fund the next 10-year iteration. And I'm not asking investment advice, but I just hear this in class, and that's the response I usually give them. If you can afford to do it and you're not risk ultra sensitive, why not?
Yeah, the way we've designed the L funds is so that the date corresponds with when you plan to take the money out, as opposed to the date you plan to retire, because those, your retirement date and when you actually take money out of the TSP is frequently not the same. And so our thought was that you pick the date closer to when you actually start taking money out. But as you say, it depends on people's risk tolerance.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we kind of laid the ground on how it works, I think, and we dug in more than the visual. And I think it's fair, and I think it was understandable. But we did get some emails from listeners. And one says, why can't employees have more latitude in trading decision? Example, at least one or two trades per week to allow for maximizing returns in a volatile environment.
This is a question that has come up repeatedly. And it's after several years ago in which we introduced some trading limitations. And I do want to go back and just say, well, the experience that we had several years ago was that there was a small group of participants, in this case about 3,000 participants, that were actively moving large amounts of money back and forth between the different funds, largely between the international fund and the G fund. And what that was doing, but that's not the only fund. It happened in the other funds as well. And that trading activity. So again, we go back to our index. So we get a big trade. We've got to go to in this case, BlackRock, and say, okay, you've got to go to the marketplace and you've got to put $300 million to work today. You've got to go out and execute trades to buy the appropriate number of all those 500 stocks, and by the right amount, execute that trade and incur trading expenses to do that. So these large trades were driving up expenses that were paid by everybody. So 3,000 people were basically causing 4 million people to get a return on their iFund or other funds that might be a penny or two less. Mm-hmm. And that's not right. And
right,
so
yeah.
We took steps to limit that, and that we now instituted a regime in which participants can do two allocations or transfers per month, but always have the flexibility at any point to go to the G fund. And for a long-term retirement plan that's designed not to react to the daily ups and downs of the market, but to react to long-term changes in allocations towards a retirement goal, we think that is perfectly sufficient. And I recognize that this particular caller may want to be able to day trade, to move in and move out. That's not what the TSP is built for.
Mm. It's a long-term investment. It always has been.
Right.
Yeah. All right. You got another question. And Larissa, this might take us over the cliff. since the Roth TSP, that was a bad choice of words, wasn't it? Since the Roth TSP has a required mandatory distribution or minimum distribution and the five-year holding rule applies, wouldn't any rollovers to a Roth IRA incur an additional five-year holding period? And I believe the answer is no, if it was already in place.
What does that exactly mean? Can you reword that in a way that... Because I didn't understand it.
Okay.
Yeah. If I didn't understand, I'm sure there's others.
Let's say you never had a Roth IRA or TSP. Never had one before.
Okay, so you're going to set one up now.
We're going to set one up.
Okay.
And we can...
With the idea of moving the money from the TSP Roth.
Well, let's just say we're going to set it up.
For what reason?
Because we want tax-free growth.
Okay.
All righty. And then we find out that maybe we shouldn't put as much money in as we did before a five-year holding period hits. And we pull the money back out, both the principal.
What's a five-year holding period?
Well, we started today.
But I mean,
January 7th.
Is that because if I take it out within the 5 years, I'm going to have to pay tax on it? Okay, that's what I think people wouldn't understand.
You don't have to pay tax on the contribution, but you'd have to pay taxes on your earnings.
Okay,
that's called the required 5 year hold period. All right, and both of them have to meet it. But since the Roth TSP is the new kid on the block, and somebody did it maybe before retirement, like you talked, maybe some of the more well-heeled people could do this. And then they would move it into a Roth IRA. Would it still have to meet the five-year hold period? And the answer is pretty complicated, right?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the typical lawyer's response to any question, and that is, it depends.
Well, that's exactly. That's bullseye.
It depends on when the first contribution was made to the Roth IRA. When you transfer funds from the TSP to a Roth IRA, those funds take on the character of the funds that are in the Roth IRA. So if you just opened the Roth IRA yesterday and you transfer money from the Roth TSP, yes, you will incur another five-year period. But if you open your Roth IRA and made your first contribution to your Roth IRA 6 years ago, you transfer funds from a Roth TSP to your Roth IRA, those funds take on the holding period, the six-year holding period of the Roth IRA, so you'll have met the five-year period in that instance.
Bullseye.
Okay.
Very good.
So that would be a way for someone who has not met the five-year holding period within the thrift, if they had an existing IRA, they can move it there and then have access to it.
Yes.
Oh, good. I learned that. Okay. Thank you for the extra explanation, because now it makes sense to me even.
All righty. We've got about 10 minutes left. We're going to take one more question from here, and then I think we'll open up the phones.
I just want to make sure that we get that five-year holding period,
right,
the purpose of that,
right,
across, and that is that, you know, the Roth says that you can get tax-free growth on your earnings. You don't have to pay taxes on your earnings, but it does set some requirements. And one of those is that you have that account open for at least 5 years. And so that's – I just want
to
make sure
you start
your listeners
to take
are clear on exactly why we're talking about a five-year holding period.
The other piece of that is 59 and a half, whichever is later. So somebody at 40 couldn't do this and just put it in for 5 years.
Right.
But it does allow those that have Roth IRAs the ability to do this for a while and not have to meet the five-year test if, like Larissa said, they had already met the five-year test and were 59 and a half with regards to their Roth IRA. Is that a fair summary?
That is fair.
Okay. One more email question, and then we're going to open up the phones at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Can the employee have separate allocation of funds within each the TSP and the Roth TSP? That's a question. And why is it that an intra-fund transfer on one side affects the other side?
You know, we thought really hard about this when we were designing the Roth TSP program. And for reasons of simplicity and minimizing costs, we decided to require that the investment allocation be the same for the traditional TSP and the Roth TSP. As you know, we have very, very low administrative costs, and that's a direct result of decisions that have been made over time to keep the plan simple. Adding Roth TSP itself added a significant complexity to the plan, and we didn't want to increase that complexity by allowing different investment allocations.
Okay, good. Good answer.
And this is one of the things, as Larissa said, we did think long and hard about. And as we rolled Roth out to begin with, it's a tough decision. I mean, if you really want to go through and make the choice between Roth and traditional contributions, you have to do a lot of homework. And so we wanted to make this as simple and easy as we could, and to add a allocation choice on top of a tax choice didn't seem to be the right way to get to a simple solution.
Okay. And I want to thank Kim. I don't know if this is Larissa and Kim, but I asked you a question last time, and I had been asking it for 4 years and involved a voluntary contribution, and I could not give people an answer. And I'm talking about the top dog all the way down, and you all put it in writing, and I want to thank you.
That was all Larissa.
Okay, but thank you.
Good research.
All righty, 202-465-3080. And before we get the first caller, I know you all sometimes do shows like this. Anything come out of those shows different than what we just did?
No.
We're pleased to get the opportunity just to tell people that the TSP is important. We take managing the TSP as our fiduciary duty, and we want more and more people to take advantage of it.
Do you have any breakdown? You know, the $330 billion, is it mostly in which fund? And are there any millionaires more than what we had in May of this year? I know you brought some statistics, and people always ask me that. They say, well, do we have any millionaires? You know, after 25 years of the TSP, do people actually have that much in there? Is that typical, or what is the typical account balance?
I know we do have millionaires. I didn't bring stats on that one today. But we don't.
Not a
we
huge
don't really
number,
focus
though.
On it. No. I mean, and I know
but employees do.
Yeah, I know. And it's
they want to know how everybody else is doing. Right.
And yeah. I guess I worry less about the people who have lots of money,
right?
And I spend more time worrying the people that don't have enough.
That's true.
And so if there are millionaires in the TSP, great. I'm thrilled. But I want to make sure that we have less people that have very small balances.
And have enough to retire with.
Yeah. And I think Kim has some stats on the allocation breakdown.
Yeah. Okay. The G fund has the most funds. It's got 43%, followed by the C fund, 23%. And there's about 15% in the L funds, all 15% distributed
between across
the different L funds,
the five different funds.
And you asked about the average size for FERS employees. It's about 88,000, and for CSRS, it's about 89,000.
Does that track with private industry 401k plans? Have you compared those numbers with what people do in the private sector?
Yes. So some of the larger mutual fund companies put out stats, and we're doing a little bit better, but not meaningfully different than 401ks in the marketplace.
Right.
But on the millionaires question, I know employees focus on that.
Right.
What they've got to remember is that a lot of those millionaires are created by rollovers of 401ks.
Exactly. Someone who came from private sector.
So it's even though the TSP has been around for 25 years and people have been assiduously investing, which we encourage, a lot of those millionaires were caused by bringing funds from outside.
It's extremely difficult in 25 years, even if you diligently were contributing, to have that much. So that's not, I always tell people that's not a realistic goal for you to have at
that
point.
That's the point I was trying to get at. Don't think that's
that you have
inherent.
To have. Somehow exactly. They have that in their mind, like, I can't retire until I have a million in my thrift. In many cases, you can. In fact, in many cases, your Social Security check and your federal retirement check will pay your bills. And the TSP is something you might not need till later on in life,
right?
So, which is nice if you're in that position.
Yeah, it is. It
absolutely.
Is. And so I just want to echo what Kim said, is that, you know, in the private sector, if you're lucky enough to work for, you know, have company stock in your 401k plan and your company, you know, goes public or does really well, you might have a really big 401k plan. And we're happy if those people decide to become federal employees and roll those large balances in. But that's not why we build our program. That's not who I'm worried about.
Yeah, I wonder how many people leave private industry to come to the government just to get into the thrift.
Well, I heard that if Mitt Romney became a federal employee, he would have had a pretty big IRA to roll over.
That would have been interesting. It would be more than $330 billion.
Yes. So Tammy and I do a fair number of retirement, mid-career, and pre-retirement seminars. And Tammy generally goes on the first day, if not always. And Tammy discusses the thrift and its basics. Tammy, I'm going to put you the spotlight on you. What kind of questions do you get when you just do the basics?
You mean for new employees or for pre-retirees?
Let's do pre-retirees.
Pre-retirees are mostly focused on the withdrawal. In fact, we pretty much, what I say, because I'm on the first day usually of a seminar, is we're just talking about benefits that day. And then the next day, either you come in or a financial advisor comes in. So I don't really talk about managing the money, but I do talk about, you know, the mechanics of taking the money out. And I hear, people not sure, like, what do you have to do or how long do you have to do it? Is there a mandatory time when you have to take it? Some people think you have to withdraw the money as soon as you separate. That's a common misunderstanding right. that we talk about in class.
Well, so. I would like to encourage everyone to visit our website.
Yeah.
TSP.gov is a great website, and people, we have, our communications office has put an enormous amount of effort into trying to make it user-friendly, to put up information that people need. And so for basic questions, there is a lot of information.
Well, I'll tell you what I do when I do teach a class. If I have access to the internet at the agency where I'm teaching, I'll shut the book that we're using that I've written, and I'll turn on the internet, and I'll go to tsp.gov, and I'll walk them through how do you find the fact sheets, how do you find the calculators, how do you find the withdrawal forms. And it's like their eyes just like, oh, I didn't know all that was there. So I think sometimes we just aren't aware of all the resources right. that are out there that are put there just for that purpose.
Yep.
Tammy, I just want to echo one of the things you said, because, in terms of killing bad rumors, this might be the best place to do it, is the nasty rumor that's been hanging around for decades that once you separate, you need to take your TSP account over. Thank you very much for just reiterating that you don't.
You don't.
And I don't know who is spreading this rumor. It might be, people at banks and insurance companies who have IRAs.
Who want the money.
Yeah. But, people, the only thing people have to do is by the time they turn 70 and a half, they have to indicate what they want to do with the money, whether they want to take it out, whether they want to annuitize it, whether they want to start a regular program of monthly payments. But until you turn 70 and a half, you don't have to do anything. You can
Other
leave
than
it right
keep
there.
Your address current.
Yes, keep your
yes,
address
absolutely.
Current.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to get cut off, and we're not 70 and a half, but we have about 30 seconds. Kim?
I just, again, go to the website and our YouTube channel, and I think that'll be very helpful for you.
Larissa?
Ditto.
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 And Greg, you already did yours.
Yes.
Tammy?
Just have a good week, everyone. Merry Christmas to my Orthodox friends.
Okay.
Today is January 7th.
Tune in next week because we're going to be on again. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.